part, if you want to take over as co-host, you got to say, welcome to Super Duper Stitches. Got it? Right, welcome. You got to not hit the mic with your face when you say it. Welcome. Just put your dad back on.
Welcome to Super Duperstitious,
the comedy podcast about the science behind the spooky and strange. Ooh, it's muscle memory now. I haven't said it in a year.
Wow. I know. It's been a year. It's been a year.
We can definitely safely say.
We're back again.
We are back again. We're so glad to be back. We're glad someone is hopefully listening to this. At least five of you seemed interested when I said we were going to do this.
We, you know, we've been making the joke that we constantly shed our listeners and that we only have like 12 hardcore listeners left over the years. And we got tired of it just being a joke.
Ordinarily on the show, we talk about spooky things, strange things, unexplained things, and try and examine them from a scientific perspective. This is a break from format this episode, so if this is your first time listening, don't start here, probably. I would say instead try, how about episode 105? That's a fun one. I think you start there instead. Come back to this one later. I don't know. But for everyone else, this is, of course, a very special episode. It is our annual Super Duperstitious Halloween Spookstravaganza, and it's coming out. This is a rare thing for us. We're recording it on Halloween, and we're releasing it also on Halloween. When you're listening to this, it is also Halloween. Do not think about it too much. Don't worry about how far on a calendar things might be from where.
It's Halloween somewhere at some point. It's Halloween. It's Halloween.
As you guys may have noticed from the outset, we do have some pretty big news after this whole year has gone by, this big comeback we got going on now. We will be making some changes with how the show is going to look based on just life schedules, what works for us, how we are able to make the show still. Probably going to be on a maybe bi-weekly at best basis, but trying to do regular stuff. And we, you know, why it's been very busy with a lot of life stuff, we will need to replace Wyatt as co-host. That is going to have to happen. Why do you want to talk about that at all?
Yeah, so as many of you will have noticed, or if you don't listen to the show at all, then you'll not have noticed at all, but I have become busy. I was never busy before. I'm busy now, and that's because of having a startup, which is basically like having a kid, and having a kid. Which is basically like having a startup. And the kid is alive. They're now 1 year old. That's where I've been for 365 days. I've been awake and doing nothing but that.
And in order to facilitate that, we're going to have Naomi replace Wyatt as co-host on this show.
Yeah.
Before we get worried, this isn't going to happen right away. There's going to be some time to adjust the change. Don't worry.
Yes.
We do have to get Naomi more mic ready. She needs some practice, obviously. And we do, you know, we have the Quaff segment where we talk about beer on the show. She'll need a little while before she can, you know, legally do that. So we're looking at, what do you think, Wyatt, like 20 years till she's ready?
Yes. Yes. By that point, I'll probably be in a home anyway.
So Wyatt will continue to serve as interim co-host until Naomi's ready to take over. So
yeah. I will be maintaining, kind of keeping the lights on for Naomi for the next 20-ish years. essentially until not the point at which she is capable of co-hosting, the point at which she's capable of legally drinking.
Exactly. And funnily enough, something we will not likely be doing a lot on the show given when we're going to be recording.
Yes, which will be from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. Sundays during church.
Should we launch into
go to church.
We actually have mostly recorded from church.
Can we jump into a church? What am I jumping into?
I said, should we, just asking if we should jump into it.
Oh, the show you mean.
Yeah, that.
Sure.
Okay.
Why not?
So back,
I guess we could.
Back very recently, just before Halloween, it is now Halloween, just before Halloween, I put out an all call to folks to submit some listener stories we could use on the Halloween episode. And some folks did actually respond. Charlie T was the first to respond to said APB. Here is what Charlie sent in. Hey guys, I already sent you an email about my spookiest experience. An editorial note, we'll read that one later in the show. But since you lit the signal flame for more, I figured I'll send you two lesser experiences. Both take place at the same turn of the 20th century house. first experience was after a fight with my then wife. She slammed the door and I heard a crash from the kitchen. Upon investigation, I discovered all my baking sheets had fallen out of their little vertical cubby under the sink. There's no door on the cubby, so it's not that unusual that they fell out. However, after they fell out, they were perfectly stacked, largest to smallest, with exact spacing. The entire stack was probably just about a foot away from the cubby and perfectly squared up with the room. Real poltergeist shit.
What's a poltergeist? It's a spirit of a person who's, getting votes out or
something. I guess something like that. I was upstairs when I heard a noise like something small falling over. Earlier that day, she had placed an action figure in its package on the top of the shoe rack by the front door. The rack was about knee high and was full of shoes on the top rack, so she would have had to place the toy either on its back, front, or lean it against the wall.
Okay.
What I saw when I leaned over the upstairs railing was the said toy in said box about 5 feet away from the shoe rack, standing up on end as if on display. It means the toy fell off the roughly 18-inch high rack, somehow bounced or rolled 5 feet away, and then finally came to rest on the smallest side it possibly could. More poltergeist shit.
Oh, yeah.
Anywho, that's what I got for you. Really only got one more story about a ghost hunt in Penhurst Asylum that's more curious than spooky, but I'll gladly tell that one. To that I say, Charlie, do tell that one.
Yeah, do tell.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on this first little thing?
Get better shelves.
Better shelves for your action figures, your bakeware, your baking figures, your actionware, whatever you need to do to make those more secure.
Your baking figure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
That's our advice to you, Charlie. Thanks for sending in your story. We're helpful.
I've decided no more ghosts.
Yeah, that's one thing that's occurred in the last year is we're actively anti-ghost on this
ghosts
show.
Ghosts are done now.
We're canceling ghosts.
They've been canceled. Any further ghosts, I don't even have salt anymore. Yeah, ghosts are canceled. I think your bakeware sounds like it's a very good stacking material. For it to stack up neatly, perfectly. I wonder what brand it is.
I just got a bunch of new bakeware from Nordicware right here in Minnesota.
Ooh.
I've been pretty excited about it. It's all aluminium, Nordicware. But it's still...
Yeah, it's a very nice brand.
Mm-hmm. Not a sponsor.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you want to hit...
What do you think it is?
I don't know. I mean, it's weird stuff like this. I realized this after the last weird thing happened to me. It was just a couple of weeks ago. I've been noticing strange things in the past year.
Not you too.
That I feel like have been like completely explainable. But like in the moment, I was like, what? My brain doesn't like process it at first. And then after, I was like, oh, I could see how that could be taken as something real fucked up. But I didn't take enough note of it to really like, I wish I'd taken more notes to have like an actual like, usable story to repeat back. Like, here's the thing that happened that was at first seemed real weird. The most recent one I can kind of remember, I was driving just home from work and saw a person on the side of the road, like just wait at a bus stop waiting, who seemed to be like, at first glance, like just my brain didn't quite take in the sight, seemed not quite like some kind of uncanny valley shit as far as they looked really not quite right.
Mm.
And then I looked back, and like as far as like the expression on their face or like their movements or something, then I looked back and realized that they were like kind of laughing and dancing a little bit, like talking on the phone, and I was like, oh, so they were doing an atypical thing you don't expect to see someone just standing around doing. And if I didn't get a second glance, I would have thought, wait, what did I just see?
Yeah.
So not a very like equivalent example to your stories, Charlie, but the idea of weird things can often just be simply that, weird things. But if you don't have an obvious way to explain it, it kind of messes you up.
Weird things are weird.
Weird things are weird. That could be the tagline of the show. Would you like to take the next story? You want me to take the next story? You can ignore the dumb little notes I put in.
Can I? Sure. So this is Adam H?
Yes.
Am I right?
Yes.
Who seems to have responded to your solicitations as well.
He sure did.
Is he being fresh?
A little bit.
Okay. Hey, Wake and Giant. He says it's been so long he's forgotten how to spell our names. Thanks for that. A few years ago, I sent you a quote-unquote black dog story that I was part of. So I'm not going to repeat that, but I do have a UAP story, which is a, what does that stand for again?
Unidentified aerial phenomenon.
Aerial phenomenon. Yeah. I remembered it.
It's a UFO. Is it? I don't know why that's better than UFO in the government's eyes.
It's more like generalized,
I guess.
Because then you don't know if it's a fly. It may not be an object. It may not actually be flying. Like, this is like semantic.
It's just aerial and stuff. A phenomenon.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a passing cloud. Is the cloud flying?
I suppose that's a fair point. It's just.
Is it an object? We don't know. It was many years ago, and I was in the backseat of my housemate's car. Sounds like a song from the early aughts. We were driving back from a weekend away, all heavily hungover, and myself and my two housemates, who were a couple, had just about enough time together, and our tempers were fraying.
Mm-hmm.
The couple were in the front seat and had been alternating between stony silence and snide arguing, so I was keeping to myself in the back, looking out the sky that was just turning to night. I saw the stars start to come out, a couple of planes flying overhead, some bats and birds.
Wow.
How'd you see the bats? And I had not much else to do, so I just kept looking because it was very peaceful.
Nice.
He said pretty, but I editorialized. Then I saw a bright light appear, either small and very close or big and a long way off. It flashed bright, then remained but a bit less bright. Oh. It flashed bright, then remained but a bit... Oh, boy. It was bright for a minute, then it wasn't so much bright. Then began to move. I saw it move in a straight line above the horizon, then in a zigzag pattern for a bit in the same direction. It stopped and flashed bright again, and then moved in reverse in a straight line along the same path above the horizon line. But it moved far enough in about 2 minutes to be visible on the other side of the car. At that point, it flashed again and sped straight down out of sight. All this time, I was transfixed. I looked at my watch just before I saw it, and it said 1727, which I guess is 527 for us Americans, / non-military. I will never forget the numbers, and my friends were just starting another round of arguing, so I didn't think to try to say anything to them. When the light dropped below the horizon, and I remember this clearly, my watch said 1723, which would suggest 4 minutes earlier. That's when I yelled at my housemates that I'd seen a UFO. I explained that my watch had gone backwards 4 minutes while I was watching it, and I described how it had moved. They didn't look to believe me. I guess they didn't look to see what he was talking about, dismissing what I'd seen. But when I asked them to look at their watches and the clock in the car, we saw that the car clock had stopped at 1727, and both of their watches in military time, interesting. Both of their watches were also showing 1723.
Ooh.
We tried to explain the time effects somehow, like our clocks were set different to the car, etc. But we remembered that we'd set all the clocks to the same time the same weekend because daylight savings had just begun. No way to explain exactly. You all sat down and were like,
all right, synchronized one, watches.
One, two, three. I doubt this part of your story, Adam. This part feels a little sniftacular to me. No way to explain exactly what happened, but I think somehow when the light reversed its travel, time clearly went backwards, but the car clock wasn't able to keep up for some reason.
Hmm.
Have at it, gentlemen. Speculate away. Thanks for the chance to share a weird story.
Thanks for sharing a weird story.
Thank you.
Time thing definitely happened. That's my explanation for that.
Yeah, 100%.
The light thing, I want to revisit the pattern of the light as far as it was a very specific set of motions that happened. So it appeared, it was either small and close or big and far away.
I think that
away.
Was the original script for Taken as well, as I could perform a very specific set of motions in particular.
Straight line above the horizon, zigzag. Man, I don't know. Can you think of anything that would look similar?
Drone.
That can move that?
Drone. It's a drone.
Did it say what year this was? Many years
1920.
Ago. 1920. Yeah, many years ago. So there's some of the earlier drones. There were, imagining drone biplanes, like a very small biplane you can remote control somehow.
Yeah. See, the trick to flying a biplane is reverse. Just reverse the spin of the blades. It's easy. It goes the other way. Yeah, you know, it could have been a drone. The clock stuff. How fresh are we meant to be to our fans now? Real fresh
know.
Or just gentle? Delicate?
Well, I mean, he was a little fresh with us about how long we've been away. So I think we can try and just like calibrate to that.
Much like one might calibrate a clock. Not an activity that you normally perform with your friends. Not a thing you're all gathering around to go, 1, 2, 3, let's synchronize.
My friends and I always make sure to do our watches completely in secret.
Private watch times. I also don't understand the reversing of time.
You turn the blades backwards, Wyatt.
Ah, that is true. Well, you might all just have the same bad watch. What's the brand of watch? The make model? Are they running on different technology than your car for some reason?
I'm assuming it's digital and not analog, but hard to say for sure. As far as
it could be.
I mean, if it says,
you have one of those little flip down number things as a wristwatch. Also, you're all using your watch. How many years ago was this?
I'm trying to think of when watches were popular.
Let's see.
I mean, I still
think someone would have at least one cellular or smartphone.
They said many years ago. I mean, maybe it was like the aughts when cell phones were still pretty clunky and not super common.
It's true.
Or, you know, maybe it was 5 years ago when you still had a flip phone. When did you get your
smartphone or my first flip phone?
Your first smartphone.
2018.
So 6 years ago. My apologies.
I got my watch just before I saw it, and it said 1727. You know? It's a mystery the way it's written.
It's a head scratcher. And as far as the moving light and stuff, like, I don't know. I mean, there's weird. One thing I know, I remember being very excited the first time I ever saw a satellite when I was like looking at the stars in the summertime. Like, if you sit out in the summertime, especially when it's like a lot of stars clear, depending on where you live, what the light pollution situation is. But watch stars for a while, you'll eventually see a really, really faint speck, like kind of fainter than the other stars, moving very steadily across the whole sky, and not blinking at all, just like a little speck. And it is just, I mean, we have so much shit we've put in orbit around the Earth, a lot of things like that. Actually, there's cool apps for watching when the space station, the International Space Station, is going to pass overhead. See what days and what times, and then especially cool when you can see, like, oh, it's going to come over the horizon over there at this time, and then it'll be overhead for this many minutes, or, you know, it's usually pretty fast. And you can watch and see it come up over the horizon at that exact time. And depending on the angle of the sun and stuff, how it's reflecting off of the ISS, it'll be very bright or not. But you can watch it come up and like go overhead and go back down again. And like just knowing, oh, cool, there's like 6 people in that, dude.
Yeah, that is pretty trippy.
A lot of weird stuff in the sky. This did not explain the zigzagging weirdness you saw. I cannot really say for sure what that could possibly be.
Well, it could possibly be a drone.
I mean, it could, depending on how long ago it was. There's stuff like weird.
1920.
I mean, 1920, that's right. There were, you know, before drones became a popular thing, people did still have, they called them quadcopters, I feel like, before they became called them drones. But like, same exact thing, just a little bit clunkier, different. I don't know. Yeah. My best guess, as you're saying too, is probably some kind of just weird
UAP.
It's a UAP. You didn't see a UFO.
It's a WAP. That's what we call WAPs on this show.
So once again, we have not helped our listeners. All right, next listener story. we got more stories. When Prop Did a Cop Up, some personal stories back when I said to a friend of the show, Lizzie C, gave us the goods a solid forever ago, actually. So this wasn't the specific when I call for stories I gave out just before Halloween. This is from, you know, when we used to remember to ask people for their stories at the end of every episode. So as he says, finally got around to putting together some paranormal stories for you guys. I've been a nurse for almost 4 years. This story comes from my time on night shift. We had a very unfortunate and unexpected death of a young woman in room 2. We're all pretty shaken up about it, but the beds in this particular hospital were a hot commodity. And after her family said their goodbyes, there was a new patient in that room within an hour. The woman was middle-aged, otherwise healthy, and had a routine thoracic surgery. When she arrived, she immediately said, "It smells like death in here."
Ew.
Now, keep in mind, we do not allow a patient's body to stay in the room long enough for there to be a smell of death. Not a usual habit in hospitals to leave bodies around at room temperature for weeks on end.
Well, the story is also taking place in 1920, I thought.
That's fair. The room is also thoroughly cleaned, and if anything, just smells like bleach. Due to privacy laws, there's no way the woman could have known someone had just died in there. We brushed it off and went about our night. An hour later, that patient hit her call light and asked why there was someone standing in the corner of her room.
Ew.
We saw no one there. Now, sometimes when patients are in the hospital for an extended period of time or on certain medications, they may start to hallucinate. However, this woman was completely alert and oriented and had no other signs of confusion or disorientation. We reassured her and again went about our duties. The next day, that patient was discharged and a new one was admitted. This patient had a new tracheostomy and therefore could not speak. There's a speaking valve patients can use, but we don't give them to the patient for at least a week after their surgery. I was right outside the room, about to go in, when I heard a piercing scream come from inside.
Ugh.
I hurried in to find the patient sleeping, knowing full well there was no way she could have even made that sound in the first place with her tracheostomy. I checked the patients next door, and they were also asleep. The next day, we found two handprints on the window.
Oh, my.
The second story is from just last week. I'm now a charge nurse on a step-down unit. We had a patient who was still in the hospital but on hospice care and not expected to make it home. We were just giving her meds to keep her comfortable and providing emotional support to her and her family. I came on shift to find she had survived the night, but her oxygen saturations were dropping quickly. We gave her morphine, and I checked in with her family. They could tell she was getting closer to the end, and we were visibly upset, so I called the chaplain for more professional spiritual support. Family expressed not knowing if the patient was truly at peace. Luckily, the chaplain had a conversation the day before about the patient and about forgiveness and about her specific religious beliefs. The chaplain knew the patient had been at peace after their conversation, and she told the family this. Later, she told me that right after she said this, she felt a touch on her arm by some unseen force. She turned to look at the patient and watch her take her last breath. The energy in the room was palpable and not like something I'd ever felt before. It was as though the reassurance her family had just received had allowed her to pass. Or maybe it was a coincidence. I'm not sure. But we all definitely felt something in that room.
Wow.
Thank you, Lizzie. Very interesting
stuff. Thank you, Lizzie.
Yeah. I can't imagine what it'd be like to work in any kinds of jobs that involve dealing with death and stuff. I mean, that's traumatic no matter what.
No,
I mean,
indeed.
Certainly with any kind of thing, you can eventually become desensitized to some extent. But, you know, not completely.
A good buddy of mine was an EMT. Actually, my brother-in-law is an EMT. And, you do just compartmentalize pretty hardcore as you get into that kind of job. But even still, I can imagine it percolates through.
Mm-hmm. And, even after if you have learned to compartmentalize and stuff, there's still going to be stuff that's still going to shake you up some. And so I imagine weird stuff like this is going to come up. I would say like a woman coming, an older or middle-aged, I guess, woman coming into a hospital saying, it smells like death in here. You know, if you're in a hospital, it's a weird place anyway.
I know. It could have just been a snarky thing to say.
Could be. Or just like maybe she just was saying like it could be, and people are weird and vibes can be also weird. So maybe that's how she. Who knows? But the fact that she also later saw someone in the room, it's kind of creepy. Same day someone died.
Yeah, it's spooky.
Yeah. The scream thing, especially, I mean, who would ever want to experience a scream happening? Even if it was like a person just saw a mouse and they're scared of mice and you just hear a sudden scream from the next room and it's totally normal and explicable and everyone's safe and fine. That's still pretty freaky if that happens.
Still upsetting.
Yeah.
I hate experiencing screams.
To have no clear source of said scream right after it happens, I don't like that. I don't like that at all.
Scream to scream, even.
What?
Instead of a said scream.
Ah, yes. We've decided we're against ghosts, so that can't explain any of it, so we don't have anything for you. Then next.
Yeah.
No,
I believe the... I can imagine with your other story, too, how... as the woman passed, a certain energy went through the room. I can only imagine.
Forgot that. That's an important one. Yeah. That's a hugely emotional thing for a family to go through and stuff.
Yeah.
And especially to have it be something they see coming and like all the different stuff that goes with that. I think that makes sense that,
yeah,
you know, it's going to feel a certain way. What I mean, it sounds, it does sound like the person, like, I could also, I've heard tell of people who are like clinging to life and then finding out that, you know, the whatever thing they were holding on for is now, like, oh, my family is safe, I don't have to be around, or just some kind of something to get, let them be at peace, allows them to suddenly let go, and then they're gone.
Right.
I could imagine if the person on their deathbed heard the conversation happening and learned, okay, they know that everything's okay, I can go now, that'd be one thing. But if they're so near the end, they're just on morphine to just like help them kind of just ease them right out, I don't know how actually aware they would be of the situation around, if they would hear the conversation happen. It's hard to say.
It's very true. But inarguably, I feel like, you know, a person passing away, it's just too powerful and mysterious not to have a very strong, you know, impact on the space.
Yes, for sure.
So
thank you very much, Lizzie, for sending those stories in. We want to thank some more listeners, but in a more formal way. Specifically, our listeners who support us on Patreon. We do that with a special device we have. Want to describe that device, Wyatt?
Oh my god. This is the pander device, right? There's a function that we run on the sort of ancient evil computer.
Yes, the NCAA, right? Which we used to use NCAA, for a different thing. Now we don't.
Which is the nominal cults assessment something something.
Antagonism assessment analyzer or something like that.
Yeah.
Which we finally managed to break that function last year, about this time last year with March Madness. It has a new function installed.
God, it's already been a year.
Yeah, we have a new function that has now listener design software for the NCAA. We're going to use that next spring. But for now, the pander function is still alive and well, and we will use
patron
that for
patron appreciation
this.
Neural die for evaluation of risk. I've remembered that part. It's essentially now stapled into my core brain.
Along
probably
with these cores we plug in. Here, let's fire it up.
Yes, exactly.
And we will plug those cores right into the base of our skull.
Oh, yeah.
Good stuff. All right, we're going to focus in first on... Wait, what does this do? We didn't tell us. So it
tells you whatever kind of fucking weird thing to avoid.
Some monsters and stuff out there. We calculate specifically for tailored to each listener what creatures, cryptids, creepy crawlies they personally need to avoid. First, we're going to focus on... Danielle, say it with me.
R. Say it with me. Say it with me now, Danielle.
Royal Oak, Michigan.
Michigan.
Thank you.
All right.
Let's focus in and see what the machine thinks you need to watch out for.
Devil Bird.
Wow. Devil Bird, locally known as Ulama, is a cryptid of Sri Lanka. It is said to emit blood-curdling shrieks in the night, an omen that portends death. Its precise identity is still a matter of debate, although the spot-bellied eagle owl matches the profile of the devil bird to a large extent, according to a sighting in 2001.
Sounds like most of the sightings are rare, and its cry is only described in vague terms. Which I suppose, you know, shrieks is pretty explicit. I guess it could be the nightjar?
Yeah.
The Ceylon Highland Nightjar, Caprimulgus indicus kilaarti, I guess.
I think that sounds about right. Fun thing about birds is that they often sound horrible. So there are a lot of birds that could have a similar screech,
yes,
or shriek. There was a systematic investigation into the identification of this bird by Dr. R.L. Spittle in his book, The Far Off Things.
Ooh, The Far Off Things is a great title. Also failed, couldn't compete with Stein in the RL department.
And couldn't compete with Larson in terms of comics.
Yeah.
Anyway, he also seemed to think it was the spot-bellied eagle owl as a possible contender, but also the changeable hawk eagle.
Wow.
Nisatus serratus ceylonensis. So there's a lot of like subspecies going on here.
Wow, this is some serious, forgot to italicize, Pernus... Anyway, we're getting away from it. Danielle, you want to stay away from this thing, whatever it is.
There's so many possible explanations for what it could be, so many identifications people have put out there for it, that your safest solution is to avoid Sri Lankan birds at all costs.
I would say that is a good recommendation.
Yes, indeed.
Certainly owls.
Yes. And thank you
so much for your support.
Yes, thank you so
really,
much.
Really, really do appreciate it.
We're going to direct our attention now to Lisa B. of Hamilton,
Ohio.
Lisa, you need to watch out for the Malpelo monster, also known as Bongo or El Monstro.
Wow, Bongo. Obviously, from the name, this is a mysterious shark-like fish.
Yes.
Of the eastern Pacific Ocean.
Off of Isla del Malpelo, an island 285 miles off the coast of Colombia.
So stay away from there, for starters. Mm-hmm. It's probably a good call. My download is being corrupted by
Aquatots
swim schools.
I wonder what this might be important, though. Maybe you need to have really good toddler swimming skills to escape the Malpelo monster.
At the very least, if you're a toddler and you're in the water with Bongo, you will need to know how to swim.
Yes.
If you want to stand any chance. The one image that I see downloaded with Malpelo monster is your standard, essentially what looks to be a great white shark about to chomp you into oblivion.
Going open mouth first, straight at the camera.
Yes.
Interesting thing we're seeing, though, from this download from the Panda Function is a lot of the description of El Monstro is in the past tense, so it's possible that this may be something that is solved. It possessed a length of 15 feet, female, and had large eyes.
Normal human speech.
Yeah, the dorsal fin was placed above the pectoral fins. Maybe this is saying how it was built. I don't know.
Yeah.
It prefers... present tense again.
Ooh,
prefers colder water under the thermocline, below 160 feet. The shark has been seen and photographed on rare occasions.
We're just calling it a shark now.
By divers. Colombian biologist Sandra Basudo launched an investigation in March 2001 to determine its status.
That was a fascinating paragraph because I feel like we went sentence by sentence emerging from unconsciousness into the present world.
Yes.
We ended on an investigation.
Uh-huh.
It started almost like it was a poetic ode to some past. Anyhow, it's a sand tiger shark. So just stay away from that island.
Here's something that's happening in the present tense. During the ultimate ocean adventure, a storm wipes out access to the shark's lair.
Oh my god.
Then a brutal band of pirates tries to hijack Sandra's boat and seizes 14 tons of sharks by stabbing her nest with their spears. What? I skipped
what?
Something. No?
Excuse me.
Huh.
I may have as well. Sandra is driven to discover the shark's identity. This sounds like a synopsis of a TV show.
It kind of does. You know, Lisa, I would avoid islands off the coast of Colombia. If you're there, make sure you either are a pirate or aren't on Sandra Basudo's team, and I think you'll be safe.
Yeah. Sharks in general, I mean, can give you this one for free. We did not need to use the machine. Generally good to avoid.
Yes.
Just for you can take that for free. And thank you so much for your support.
Thank you so much for your support.
Really, really do appreciate it.
Yes. If you would like to have your own bongo calculated by this machine to save you from certain death or strange oceanic adventures, all you got to do is sign up to our Patreon for $5 a month. You can get that done. You can also, you'll receive, supplies are limited. I got to order more. We still have a few more glasses to send out, these friggin' pint glasses with our logo on them. And what else? You'll get access to all of our outtakes and bonus minisodes. I've calculated it's like just shy of 26 hours of bonus content.
Oh my.
And at some point we will add more content to that.
Yeah.
Fun stuff. At higher tiers you can also get, you know, merch discounts at our store. We do have a store on our website, superduperstitches.com/shop. We have cool merch there. It looks good. I'm wearing a t-shirt right now. It has our logo. It's comfortable.
It's comfortable.
What else? What else? I don't know. Help us make the show. It's great. We like it. We love it. Thank you. Goodbye.
Powering down.
And we can resume again looking at some delightful listener stories. This next one is from a friend of the show, Caitlin Hobbs. Why, you want to take this one?
Yes.
This one is kind of, I think it's more my jam, but I deliberately haven't read it because it seems exciting, so I want you to
surprise
me.
I'm happy to listen in.
I want to get to experience it.
Okay.
Au naturel. Hang on, let me take off.
Jake is taking his clothing off, yeah. Caitlin Hobbs says, so Jake knows all about this. Oh, excuse me. Jake knows all this. My brain just wants to put stuff in some places. But for those who have not yet been subjected to my existence, I have a BS in anthropology, Bachelor of Science, focusing my studies in the biocultural anthropology and thanatology.
It's a study of Thanos.
In the biocultural anthropology and thanatology, I consider myself an amateur folklorist and plan to get my master's in folklore at some point. But despite being self-taught so far, I have a shit ton of folkloric knowledge. I also have a pretty substantial background in biology and psychology as well. I live in the foothills of Appalachia in North Georgia, so I have seen all manner of critters in my life. All of this is to say, and they use a very bad word here, I know my stuff. Up until recently, I was working on an archaeological site a little north of Indianapolis. We were working 10-hour days, Monday through Thursday, and only had hotel reservations during that time. From Thursday night to Sunday morning, we were on our own for accommodations. Since I live in Georgia, I was not about to drive 7.5 hours home after working a 10-hour shift, just to turn back around and drive back up in 2 days. So I had been using the opportunity to visit my boyfriend over in Columbus, Ohio. It was pretty nice, since otherwise I generally get to see him a little under a week out of every month. It was on just such a drive on a Thursday night after work that I saw what is generally referred to as a crawler. My goodness, crawler spotting.
Yes, indeed.
I was driving on I-70 East, which if you're not familiar with that interstate, is pretty flat and boring.
It's bleak as farms. Shit. You get to, once you get to Ohio, you keep going west from there, or you get a direction. It's nothing until well past Kansas. It is so dull a drive.
Woof. Bunch of farms with the occasional bushes along the roadside, maybe a wooded area here and there. I was coming up to just such a wooded area at about dusk and 1.5 hours into my 3-hour drive when I saw the bushes in front of the trees rustling, like something was moving around in them. I kept my eye on them as I got closer in case a deer or something decided to come charging out. And a buck, or I guess I'll read this part, the mating drive is strong this time of year. And a buck deciding it was time to get it to. And a buck deciding it was time to get jiggy with it and surprisingly throw me. Oh my God. And a buck deciding it was time to get jiggy with it and surprisingly throw himself in front of my car was the last thing I needed. Whew, got there after a long day doing physical labor in the sun. I was a lacrosse goalie for years, including in college, and still have a pretty good reaction time, but forewarned is forearmed and all that, so I was keeping as close an eye on those bushes as I safely could. Except what came charging out of those bushes was not a deer, or raccoon, or possum, or even a coyote.
It was all of the above.
Yeah, humanoid. Somewhat. That's the closest shape I could give it, though the proportions were not right. It was moving on all fours, kind of similar to how a human would, but the limbs were too long and the gait was too, well, a little too gallopy almost for a human moving on all fours.
I think I want to relink in this episode description, I want to relink to that video clip of CCTV footage of that highway in, I think, the UK of some weird thing galloping across
it. Oh, yeah.
Very upsetting.
It was. Its back was still sloped towards its back legs the way a human's would be if they were walking planter while on all fours, but there wasn't as much of a bend in the knee as in a standard human since this thing's arms were long enough to not necessitate it. Even with my headlights on and the sun setting behind me, I could still see that this thing was pale white, and I really don't think it had any hair or fur. Just pale skin all over while this thing made a break for it across the highway. When I say I almost pissed myself, y'all, I mean I almost pissed myself. I'm glad there was no one immediately behind me because I definitely slammed on my brakes some and saw the car behind me in the next lane over do the same. Unfortunately, it moved too fast for me to get a good look at the head beyond just humanoid in shape and no noticeable antlers or horns, no video or pictures since I was, you know, driving. But this thing at a glance was not any recognizable local fauna, nor did it move like one. Whatever it was weird.
Sounds like.
I mean, like I... Go on.
No, I was just agreeing. Yes, continue.
I mean, like I said, this was after a 10-hour physically laborious shift and halfway into my drive, so I was tired and had already downed a Red Bull to take the edge off. But I was But I also was just listening to music at the time, no spooky podcasts or anything to set me up for seeing something spooky. Do with this what you guys will, but I know this is right up Jake's alley as a potential crawler sighting.
Oh, it sure is. Man, I don't know what I would do if I mean, I've made it clear over the course of the last few years of this podcast that I really like crawler stories because they're so creepy and strange, and that I want to see one, but like, not up close. But it's like a lot of the stuff we cover on the show. It would be very exciting to see or experience these things, but also horrible and the worst. I don't know.
That'd be spooky as heck.
I think I'm going to try and make a resolution for this new year of podcasting to keep better track of the weird stuff, like I mentioned earlier in this episode, of stuff I've seen that at first I just didn't understand when I was seeing it, and I've had to double take and step in and take better note of what I was seeing and make it into a thing that does make sense. I want to try to get a better, like, first-person experience with trying to get in the mindset of where you could be when you see a thing you don't understand and what that could do to your perspective on that stuff. I'm talking in circles to some extent, but
kind of get yourself into the mindset of someone who might be primed to see something even if they don't think they're primed to see it.
Yeah, or like the particular way my obsessive compulsive disorder often manifests is it physically makes me uncomfortable if I don't, like, if I start reading a street sign as I'm driving by and don't finish it. Like, I need to know what the rest of it said.
You have to just, like, stow? You don't quite get the P in there?
What was I supposed to do? Because of that, I will do whatever I can to try and see the rest of what I miss. Like, if I saw something as I was driving by, if it's possible to catch it in the rear view mirror.
Literally anything.
I will stop at nothing. But no, like the anecdote I gave earlier about that guy who was at the bus stop who didn't look quite right in terms of what my brain was expecting, if it weren't for that compulsion I have, that compulsive reflex to look back, get that forced double take in, I'm really not sure what my mind might have done with only the initial information without that clarifying second look. And I mean, I don't think the average person cares so much about all these mundane things to want to look a second time. So if something actually kind of weird and not mundane were to come up, not getting that second look, not going so far out of one's way the way I do to get that second look, to get the clarification, I wonder in such instances what my imagination might do with only the first look, only the fleeting glimpse.
Is this like your going to allow for that sort of incomplete sentence of information to percolate a bit and see what your unprimed, pre-primed, whatever primed brain does to fill in the gaps?
Yes.
Cool.
So I'll kind of low-key experiment just going forward that I think could be useful to the show, maybe, or at least be kind of a fun experiment for myself to try and put myself in the mindset of some of these folks. I don't know.
I'd be very intrigued to see, and I don't know if I should say this out loud or not because I don't want to prime you further than you've already
do it,
primed
do it,
yourself.
Prime me.
Which is, over time, I wonder if they don't get more elaborate.
Ooh. Ooh, yeah. We'll
but
find
the
out.
The idea in saying that is not to key you up to want to make them more elaborate.
Yeah. Just get to these really crazy, like, fish stories. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you so much, Caitlin, for sending that in. Please continue
to
have crawler sightings so I can hear more about them because this is very exciting. And thank you for being a friend of the show. We will very likely have you on at some point to talk about some folklore stuff because, duh, cool stuff. Next story, I'll take this one. So Charlie T, we got his story, one of his more recent stories earlier on in the episode. He mentioned sending a one in previous to that. Here is that story, his first email to us. He said, well over 10 years ago, I was on a weekend trip to Boston with my then-girlfriend, and she discovered a Salem ghost hunting crew was doing public investigations. So we signed up last minute and headed to Salem. For folks who haven't been to Massachusetts before, Salem is a delightful place to visit if it's not October. Then it is the tourist trap of all tourist traps.
April, too.
Yeah, because that's when Halloween is. That's right. It was a cold and drizzly night, so we ended up being the only people participating. Investigators started us at the burying point, the old cemetery in the middle of Salem, where they buried some of the victims of the trials. They had us using pendulums, which I knew even then was bunkum, but my girlfriend was enjoying it and getting quote-unquote results.
What does that mean?
pendulum, so you can like, my understanding is you can have the pendulum swinging like in a circle, and you're like holding it over your hand, and it'll swing clockwise or counterclockwise, whatever, and you can ask questions and it'll change the direction of the swing. That's supposed to be how it works, and like, it's theoretically, oh, you're not using your hand holding the pendulum to change the swing. It's happening on its own. But as with Ouija type stuff, you know, maybe there's some influence, physical influence you don't realize you're actually contributing. Since we were the only couple to show up, and this was probably one of their last investigations, the group disbanded shortly thereafter. So we broke up this investigation team. The investigators decided to treat us to an extended hunt and took us back to their office for an EVP session. Their office was nearby in an old firehouse. Oh, this was the Ghostbusters. They actually got to do this investigation with the Ghostbusters, which unfortunately looked nothing like the one from Ghostbusters. Oh, shit. Okay, I should have just finished the sentence. We sat down in the lobby, and they proceeded to prime us on what to expect. I naturally tuned them out. Toward the end of the EVP session, I felt this pressure on the back of my head, like something was pushing my head down. Brought it up to the group, and of course, it was a mischievous ghost they didn't tell us about, called the Creeper, who was a circus performer who had his tongue cut out for some reason, and now he lives in the super haunted basement of their firehouse, but comes out to mess with people. Insert eye roll.
That's right.
In hindsight, I was probably just tired, since this was like 1 or 2 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
We played back the EVP recording of the EP, played back the recording of the EVP session, and of course, everyone is hearing responses except for me. So I get bored and start playing around with an infrared thermometer they had. I was just scanning it across the ceiling when I caught something weird when I passed over a light fixture. A cold spot.
Glass.
Lights were off, huh?
Go on.
What'd you say?
Glass. You're like, you must repeat it.
The lights were off to set the mood, but they were on when we arrived, so the fixture should be warmer. As I looked at it and pondered, I noticed the temperature rise back up to the ambient temp. I scanned the rest of the ceiling and kept finding a cold spot that would raise back up to normal temp. It was a roaming cold spot. I didn't say anything because I'm sure it was a snowflake, the ghost. I'm sure it was Snowflake the ghost who hangs out on the ceiling and died in a freezer.
Very good.
As we neared the end of the recording, I did notice a faint clicking sound responding to questions. And then the clicking got stronger and more distinct with each response until eventually someone asked something outside of the recording and the clicking responded in the room with us.
What?
That was pretty creepy. For some reason, this freaked out the investigators, and they tried to call it a night, but as we talked, the clicking response in the room not only continued, but got louder and more aggressive. An angry dolphin ghost, I guess.
Yeah.
Eventually, they guided us to the exit, which, of course, was a narrow staircase. As soon as I started to take the first step, there came a clicking above my head in the doorframe, so I'm certain you could have heard it from outside. Needless to say, I clinged on to the railing for dear life. As soon as we got out of the building, I immediately contacted Lorraine Warren to investigate. Just kidding, fuck the Warrens.
Very funny.
Thank you so much, Charlie T. That is a terrific story. The reason I saved it for, like, chronologically, I didn't do them in order, because this is a very fun, cool, neat one that we want to save for later in the episode. Creepy as hell. Don't like clicking. That's an interestingly... I mean, what are some...
Who likes clicking?
Clicking's bad. I mean, clicking is used to pretty good effect in some different horror franchises. Like, there's like, you know, The Last of Us clickers were a whole subset of the different creatures. And I feel like, isn't there some clicking in Hereditary? I can't remember. But
I think the daughter does that a little bit. But yeah, I speak only from a very outside lens, right? Because I have not seen it, because I'm a big scary cat.
Same and same. All this is to say that that's a kind of like not natural noise you expect to hear that could be extra creepy just based on that alone. The fact that you went into this whole thing skeptical also, I think, is helpful in, you know, making it feel more real as it gets weirder.
Yeah, if nothing else, I really enjoy the way you've told this story.
Oh, yeah.
It makes me buy it more. And I don't doubt that you would have had some spooky experiences because you essentially spent the night telling yourselves you should be scared.
Right. Yes. So I don't have an explanation for it other than, and like the cold spot thing, I wouldn't have had an explanation before now. I kind of still don't have a satisfactory one, but having just recently tried to set up some infrared camera things for a lab at work at the museum, like for some of the classes we're going to do, like we're trying to do an activity involving
ghosts.
Yeah, it involves ghosts. So we're trying to set up some ghost stuff. Now, we're just trying to use some infrared cameras that we have used before that work well and have worked in the past just fine. and suddenly do not. And like they're doing a weird thing where they'd cycle through every possible temperature. You just point it at like the wall, and it would start at like the lowest temperature and just like cycle within a few seconds up to the highest temperature and back down again. And just kept doing that on repeat. And it was so weird. And so as far as the idea of like seeing, and like, so we get to focus on like a chair, and then it would slowly go out of focus, and like the temperatures would go all over the place. Stuff like that, tech like that can get weird. And so as far as seeing an area that seems cold and seeing it get back to ambient temperature could just be a weird hardware or software glitch. Right. But the idea that you kept finding this one spot that seemed to kind of roam around the room is pretty cool and strange. Yeah.
It's mysterious. I mean, I like that Charlie even kind of goes like, maybe it was nothing. Because I also think it could have been a tech issue, but the clicking thing is creepy.
Clicking thing is creepy as hell, especially if it kept getting worse and worse. It could be that it was a thing that the investigators, like, maybe they were fucking with you and they wanted
to make it. Maybe they spoofed you, yeah.
Yeah. But at the same time, if they, like, I don't know, it sounds like they were getting actually creeped out and, like, wanted to just get you out. Maybe that was the way of, like, maybe that was how they decided to get people out. Like, hey, this is, we got to get you guys out of here. This is creepy. Instead of just saying, hey, just leave, please. Who knows how what their own social etiquette is for how they end an investigation.
It's a very strict tribe, the ghost hunter tribe.
Very true. And if they ended there, like they closed up shop shortly afterward, then maybe they got clicked to death. Who knows?
They got clicked to death. Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly.
But thank you very much, Charlie, for that very creepy story.
Thank you very kindly. So one final story. Am I to be reading this?
Yeah. Go for it.
Am to I be reading this?
Yup.
Okay. Okay. Very special episode, deserves a very special story for the finale.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin M. sent the following to us back in March.
Of last year.
Of last year. Oh, yeah. My. Never mind. Not recent at all. It's going to be 13 months, which is also a very cursed number.
Ooh.
My name is Kevin, and I've listened to every episode of your podcast. It has gotten me through many hours of mindless work. I wanted to write a story for the show, but sadly, I was diagnosed with chronic laziness. So I decided to make a prompt for ChatGPT and have it do it for me. Yes, Kevin, I understand where you're coming from.
It's the future of all storytelling right here.
The future of essentially all content, ChatGPT. What a nightmare in and of itself. Frightening monster for another episode, as it were. But here we go. This is Chat's finale for our 2023 Halloween
Spookstravaganza.
Spookstravaganza. I always get it wrong, even though I came up with it. Is that true?
No.
No. Then I'm just dumb. Jake couldn't believe his luck when he landed a job that paid him to do nothing more than sit in a white room and press a button every time it lit up. At first, he was thrilled with the prospect of getting paid for doing something so mindless. The pay was good, and he was allowed to leave whenever he wanted, but he couldn't come back once he left.
What?
The monotony of the... Yeah. The monotony of the job quickly got to him, though. Days turned to weeks, and weeks turned into months of sitting in the same room, staring at the same white walls, and hitting the same button. He would listen to music, read books, and even started a daily workout routine to pass the time. But no matter what he did, the room remained the same. I would
even go so far as to start working out.
Yeah. The room remained the same, and the button kept lighting up. One day, as Jake was about to hit the button, he heard a strange noise. It was like a deep growling sound coming from just outside the room. He dismissed it at first, thinking it was just his imagination, but the noise grew louder, and he felt like something was watching him. The next day, he saw muddy footprints on the floor that were too large to be human. They led up to the door and then disappeared. That night, he heard the growling again, and this time it was closer. So does Jake live inside of this white
room?
That's
what I'm getting from this. I have deliberately not read this one up until now for this reason. It sounds like I do live in the room.
It's a white room. And so, of course, these muddy footprints would be very, very, very obvious. I guess you live in this room?
Uh-huh. And the footsteps lead up to the door and then disappear? So, like, something was in the room muddy and left? Or am I looking
too large
to
be human, but presumably they were human-shaped?
Yeah.
Yes, they led up to the door and then disappeared. You heard the growling again. This time it was closer. Jake tried to tell his employer about the strange occurrences, but they dismissed it as his imagination. They told him that he was there to do a job, and as long as he pressed the button, he would get paid. But Jake knew something was wrong. One day, while he was taking a break from, I guess, pressing a button all day, he saw something move outside the window, which we didn't know he had on the room. At first, he thought it was a bear, but as it got closer, he realized it was Bigfoot. There you have it. Simple as that. Show the monster, as they say. Yep. Always the most frightening thing you can do. The creature stared at him through the window before disappearing into the woods. Jake started drinking Four Phantoms, a local beer that he had heard was popular with the locals, to cope with the stress of the job and the strange occurrences. He would drink himself to sleep every night, hoping to forget about the growling and the footprints and the strange creature he saw, which we now know is Bigfoot. But the more he drank, the more his sanity slipped away.
One of the side effects of Four Phantoms, by the way.
Yeah, we never mentioned that one. He started having vivid nightmares about the room, the button, and the creature outside the window. He would wake up in a cold sweat, convinced that he had done terrible things when he hit the button. He couldn't live with the knowledge of what he may have done. One day, he snapped. He grabbed a hammer from the toolkit in the room and started smashing the button. He didn't care about the consequences anymore. He just wanted it to stop. As the pieces of the button flew across the room, he heard the growling again. This time, it was coming from behind him.
It was coming from inside the button.
It was coming from inside the hammer. He turned around and saw Bigfoot standing in the doorway, glaring at him with its deep, dark eyes. It's almost getting erotic.
Soulful.
Jake froze, unable to move or speak. He knew that he was going to die. But Bigfoot just stared at him for a moment before turning and walking away. Jake was left standing alone in the room, surrounded by the wreckage of the button. Not sure a button qualifies.
How big
as
was
something
the button?
Can have a wreckage.
Yeah, was it a really, really big button? Maybe that's why it was such a hard job.
And the shattered pieces of his sanity. Maybe that's the other portion of the wreckage. He realized then that he had been a prisoner all along, not just of the job, but of his own mind. In the end, Jake's body was found, slumped in the corner of the room, a hammer by his side. The cause of death was listed as suicide, but those who knew him best knew the truth. He had been driven mad by the monotony of the job, the fear of the unknown, and the ever-present threat of Bigfoot.
I like the idea of the in descending orders. Like, oh, he was really driven by mad by like being in that room. Also, there was a giant monster threatening him all the time. That wasn't as big a factor, though. That we'll put it as third in the list.
I'm not sure that it even qualifies as threatening, though. Bigfoot is essentially just a meteorological event in this story. He's not really doing anything. Well, Kevin, thank you for that. If you
absolutely
did actually secretly write
tale.
That and just pretended it was ChatGPT, shame on you. You shouldn't pretend to steal AI's work in that way. or whatever. But thank you. That's very fun.
Thank you very much.
Perhaps more ChatGPT stories could just supplant all of Reddit for us down the road.
There you go. And that is how I will die.
How you will die.
In the presence of a monster I specifically on the show do not believe in.
Yes, and the one that I'm even 70-30 hanging up the towel on myself.
Wow. That's,
I know.
The odds keep getting, the ratio keeps getting slipping away.
Slipping away, exactly. Much like Bigfoot into the woods. Thank you all so much for listening.
Thank you very much for joining us on the seventh annual Super Duperstitious Halloween Spook Extravaganza.
Wowzers.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah. We've been doing this for 180 episodes now. And we're super glad that folks are around to listen at all. If you want to rate and review the show, feel free to do so. That really does help us out. If you want to just tell people about the show at all, that helps us just as much because, it means people are listening to it, which is a reason to make it more than just because we want to, which is still a reason. But,
Yeah.
Yeah. If you have any stories of your own creepy, unexplained things you want us to try and explain or just shrug our shoulders at for an hour on mic, please feel free to share them with us. You can hit us up via the contact form, which we'll link in the episode description, or you can just email us directly. That email address is Wyatt.
contact@superduperstitious.com.
Yes. And you can also just send us topic suggestions, ask us stuff, or just say hi. We're happy to get emails in general, whatever the case is. other than that, yeah, we'll join you again next time, which will hopefully be a soon time. And the topic, mm-hmm. I don't know what it is yet, so we'll all find out together.
Yeah, discoveries. Nice to be back.
Very nice, yes. I don't know, bye.
Goodbye.